You're listening to Full Power Living with Eileen Dillon.
Welcome once again to Full Power Living, the only show on international media that's dedicated to the exploration and understanding of emotions and their role in human life. I'm Eileen Dillon, your show creator and host, and we have a very focused show on emotions for you today. For many generations, we human beings have been taught to ignore, push down, or run from our emotions, and they've even been demonized. When we become emotional, we now say that we lose control. And as we've discussed on this program, now seems to be the time for us humans to reclaim our rightful relationship with emotions, which, after all, must have a purpose for existing, and in my view, are trying to offer us some help. So if you've been wanting to open up your own emotions and you felt that it's too dangerous or you don't know how to do it or whatever, you're going to really enjoy today's show, in which we're going to be talking about six basic emotion groups. And our guest today, Jude Bijou, has developed a powerful system for addressing these six basic emotions and putting you back in the driver's seat with your own emotions. So keep listening as I talk with marriage and family therapist Jude Bijou. And also during this broadcast, interact with us on our chat here on the radio show page of emotionalpro.com or the blogtalkradio.com/FPL page. Also, we have a toll-free number, 888-498-0570, 888-498-0570. Well, Jude Bijou has a master's degree and is a licensed marriage and family therapist, a professional educator, and a workshop leader. Her theory of attitude reconstruction evolved over the course of more than 30 years of working with clients as a therapist, and is the subject of her new award-winning book, Attitude Reconstruction, A Blueprint for Building a Better Life. You can learn more about her and her work at attitudereconstruction.com. Jude Bijou, welcome to Full Power Living.
Well, it's just my pleasure to be here.
Great. Well, so when you're working as a psychotherapist, it becomes clear that emotions are the culprits in a lot of the difficulties that people bring to therapy. And so when you saw that, you began to develop this holistic understanding of how emotions affect us and how we can move from what we normally call negative emotions to a more positive side of life. How did you get interested in all of this? And how did working with people and their emotions lead you to create attitude reconstruction?
Well, I think it's really in my genes that I've always been interested in people and how they work. And so it was really natural to become a psychotherapist. And in my training, I came across something called reevaluation counseling. And what they really exposed me to for the first time was the idea of emotions. Like, I didn't grow up as a very emotional child. It wasn't big in my family to cry and to get the anger out and so on. But there I found a place where people were talking about emotions and releasing emotions, and it was like, oh, there's something really here. And as I delve in further and further, and both with my own process and with serving other people, the pieces started coming together. It went way beyond what I had originally seen. And that also was my Eastern meditation training. Everything sort of came together into this theory or this approach called attitude reconstruction.
Uh-huh. Well, that's really interesting. So we couldn't see, you know, a lot of therapists I know, myself included, come to therapy out of pain. You came, it sounds more like seeking and being interested to find out more. So you may know that I also have focused on emotions in my work. And you know, it seems to me, while we can't get rid of them, they're with us all the time, they must have a purpose, and yet our relationship with our emotions is so poor that they tend to control us instead of us being in charge of them. And it's my opinion that most people don't believe there's much they can do about emotions. What can they do? What can be done?
Well, it really starts with realizing that we are emotional beings, that just as we can speak and we can talk and we can act and we can think, we also have emotional reactions, that everybody has that capacity. What we've gotten was all of these bad messages, these cultural messages like girls aren't pretty when they're angry, and, you know, big boys don't cry, and don't be a sissy, don't be a scaredy cat. We got so many messages that what we did naturally as a child got really systematically removed from our repertoire, and we decided, in order to survive, that we needed to compensate. And so we started to take on what I call bad attitudes instead of expressing those emotions in a very natural and normal way.
Mm-hmm. Wow. What do you mean by bad attitudes? I know you talk about it in your book, but just give us a summary of what's a bad attitude.
Well, when it gets down to it, I believe that there are really only three bad attitudes. A bad attitude really is anything that takes us away from feeling the emotions of joy, love, and peace. Because I don't think of those as just holiday platitudes. I think of those as three of the six emotions: sadness, anger, and fear. Joy, love, and peace. And when we don't handle the sadness, anger, and fear, we compensate. And that's where we take on what I discovered was bad thoughts about ourselves. We're not honoring ourselves. Those are bad attitudes, not feeling good about ourselves and doing things that honor ourselves. Not accepting other people and situations, so external things, and thinking they should be different. And being in the future and the past and making global extrapolations. Those are the three core bad attitudes that keep us away from really feeling happy.
You know, one of the things I really, really liked about reading your book, Jude, was the whole strong feeling of system. Everything that you write about just falls together very nicely into a system, and it makes it really understandable. For example, the areas of sadness, anger, and what's the other one?
Fear.
Fear, thank you. Yes, it's sudden. Well, I was afraid I was going to forget. No. sadness, anger, and fear, they're sort of like emotional groupings, if you will. There are other emotions, other aspects of each of those that are included in there, but you have it down to like there's three main things, and there are three things that you can do about it, and there are three things that these three things can turn into, and it's really nice to have that. One of the things you say about emotions is that each emotion wears a different face, and you also talk about us having different emotional constitutions. Can you describe what you mean by that?
Absolutely. So it's really two points. One is that emotions are really emotion, energy in motion. So I see them as pure sensations in the body. It's a physiology. There's no words in the emotional body. There's just this energy. And each of these six emotions all feel differently. Well, feel different, but with sadness, feels that heavy down feeling. That's what in the body, the physiology. Anger is hot, and we want to strike out and destroy. It's that energy moving outward. And with fear, it's that agitation. So those three emotions make it really easy to figure out, what am I feeling? Sadness, anger, and fear. If I'm not feeling good, one of those three emotions is the culprit. And then it's like, how am I going to move that emotion out of my body? But for me, we can have a ton of different feelings, because I think a feeling is, I've got this emotional sensation in my body, and then I add my thoughts to it, what's happening in the world, and what I feel in my history, and then I create a ton. We have hundreds of different feelings, actually, from feeling guilty or impatient or resentful, jealous, whatever. But underneath that, there's just those three physiologies, sadness, anger, and fear.
Mm-hmm.
And
that really simplifies it. That's great.
Mm-hmm. 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 Because then we're just dealing with energy. And what we have to do is take a page from the playbook of children and do what they do when they feel those emotions. And if we do, then the energy moves out of our body and we're back to our center. We're back to our full, present, happy, joy, love, and peace kind of being.
Well, now the tagline of this show is to pay attention not to what you want to overcome, but to what you want to become. And I saw that. You didn't use those words, of course, but I saw that as I was reading Attitude Reconstruction, and as you were talking just now, that's what kids do. They distract themselves. They go on to something else. They move to something that feels better. And that's essentially what you're suggesting that we do. Is that correct?
Well, but they feel the emotion. They experience the emotion, and then it passes, and then they naturally move on. So that little child that flops down on the floor and has the temper tantrum and kicks and screams because they can't have the cookie or can't have the toy, if the parent just like witnesses and takes them to a safe place, we don't do that for days on end. The energy moves 2 minutes, 5 minutes, the energy's passed, and then the child gets back to, you know, getting interested in something else, you know, mostly getting interested, and maybe they fall asleep if they've done like heavy crying or something like that. But the energy passes because they've dealt with it.
And so in your approach, you suggest that we start by letting the energy pass physically through crying, pounding, and why do I always forget the third one here? Crying, pounding, and shivering.
Right. Shivering, exactly.
Yeah, I was very interested in shivering. We did a program a few years ago on trauma release, and he has a technique of putting your body in a particular position so that you make it shiver all over as a way of releasing trauma, you know, stating that that's what animals do whenever they've had trauma. They shiver first before they go on.
Exactly. That's the natural body, the body doing what's natural, is that we do shiver. You know, it's that thing, well, like panic attacks are a really good example of how much bottled up fear is there, and the body just can't stop but moving. But what we do is we tighten against that sense that we try to distract ourselves rather than accentuate it and let it run out of the body. So I just say, shiver and quiver and tremble and shudder and you know, make silly noises, but to let that energy out of the body, and we're left with calm, we're left with peace. But it's really just doing what the body naturally wants to do in a constructive way, physically, but constructively.
Now, you advocate pounding on phone books, and I want to know the resource for your phone books because you must go through a lot of them. That's a joke only, but that's a lot of phone books. So you... I've often told people to take their hands and pound their own bed or something like that when they're on their knees as something to get that energy out. And that was very much in vogue maybe in the 70s and 80s, but it's not so in vogue anymore to actually physically release.
Well, we've got to bring it back because what happened with those original studies is that they didn't check and see what the people were thinking at the time, because if I'm releasing my anger and if I'm going, darn it, that person shouldn't be like that, he's such an idiot, I can pound forever and I'm still going to be mad. I'm not going to get that relief. But if I deal with it just as an emotion and own it as mine, I'm just so angry, and just moving the energy out, then it passes.
Uh-huh. But so it might even be more effective not to use words at all because you're really dealing with the energy. Is that right?
Exactly, exactly. If you have to use words, you just state what you're feeling. I'm just mad. I just feel mad. But basically, it's beyond words. Oh.
Sounds like the old bioenergetics.
Yes. But you raise a nice point, because I actually get phone books. When the new phone books come out, I go to the recycle center and snag all of the old ones. And where I originally saw this, and maybe you have come across this as well, is I went to an Elizabeth Kubler-Ross workshop on death and dying long time ago. And that's what she had, mattresses on the floor with phone books and a plastic hose, a flexible plastic hose. And because she really made that popular to understand that we naturally feel angry at the passing of a loved one, those injustices that we feel. So that's where I really got cued into an effective way to do that, because that's what I do with clients. I'll have either an individual or a couple come in, and sometimes people come, oh, Jude, I'm not getting my anger out. I better have a session. But I just pull out very ceremoniously a big stack of old phone books, give them a hose, and they pound the heck out of them, you know, until they're exhausted, catch their breath, do it again, pound it again, just making the sound, pound it, a few cycles of that, and they're too exhausted to fight, but they're also clear. Maybe they start crying, maybe they start then being able to reevaluate what's going on in their life.
Okay, so when we're working with our emotions, the first thing we need to do is give ourselves permission to have them, and then we process them by dealing with the energy of them on this physical basis, by crying, shivering, or
pounding, stomping. Yeah,
I'm stuck. I know you have a two-step process later. I'll be fine when we get there. But so first we then get it out, and then according to attitude reconstruction, then we start looking at our thoughts, because I know that years ago, like Bach, who invented the Bach flower remedies, noticed that different groups of people with certain illnesses had similar emotional makeup, similar emotional ways of looking at things or being with things. And that seems a little bit like what you're doing. You're saying, okay, we either are sad or we're angry or we're fearful, basically. And we tend to emphasize one of those usually.
Yes,
do I understand that correctly?
Yes, but we can be a combination, you know, like not like one event, like a loss, maybe a death. I can feel incredibly sad, but I also, there's a layer of anger about that, and maybe there's a layer of fear. Like the emotions are so intertwined that sometimes they're in just, I just feel angry. But a lot of times it's a combination of all three of them. But that's what I found is if we're not crying enough, then what I found was that, because I got very nosy when I was talking, what are you thinking? You know, when they're crying and crying, what are you thinking? And it really turned out that they were not thinking well about themselves. That's what happens with the anger when we don't cry enough and cleanly enough. We take it onto ourselves. We don't feel good about who we are. So that's what we do with the sadness. And so, you know, there's just a real direct correlation between unexpressed sadness and not feeling good about ourselves. And in the same way, like with anger, people who haven't expressed their anger enough, and so that they're really bottled, you know, it's really bottled up, it comes out about the outside world. It's that I'm critical, I'm sarcastic, I'm out for me first, they're not okay, they should be different, they should be my way. That's the kind of thinking that we naturally do, and it only indicates I've got a whole lot of anger. And if I'll start to deal with that anger, I'll feel more loving, because those emotions are in opposites. Move the anger out, and I'll feel more love.
Mm-hmm. That's so beautiful. I like the way that, that fits together. All right, it's time for a break. My guest today is Jude Bijou, who's a psychotherapist, and she's also author of Attitude Reconstruction, about powerful ways of taking charge of your emotions. Remember to call in, 888-498-0570, 888-498-0570. We'll find out more about how you can work with your emotions when we return. We'll be right back.
You're listening to Full Power Living with Eileen Dillon.
As a parent, have you found all the parenting information you've been hearing lately a bit confusing? Are you having trouble sorting out the best response to your defiant child, or feeling hopeless about regaining respect from your teen, or determining whether your actions as a parent are the right ones? Instead of the usual pressures of parenting that you've been experiencing, you can partner with your child, raising incredible kids who are destined to become amazing adults. I'm Eileen Dillon, the Emotional Pro, giving you the opportunity to become the incredible parent for incredible kids. We have the method and the tools. You bring your optimism for learning and the kids. Raise Incredible Kids offers a comprehensive system for raising kids who are responsible, make their own great decisions, and become immune to peer pressure. To get you ready for this new era in parenting, get my free 10-page report, Incredible Communication That Helps You Create Incredible Kids, by visiting RaiseIncredibleKids.com now. That's RaiseIncredibleKids.com. Full Power Living. I have a few announcements. Our upcoming guests are listed at the top of our radio show page on emotionalpro.com. Next week, I talk with Catherine Tristan, who's a research scientist on the faculty of Washington University School of Medicine, who learned so much as she sought solutions to her own anxiety that she wrote a book entitled Why Worry? If you or someone you love worry, don't miss this show. If you can't listen to the live broadcasts, please subscribe to Full Power Living on iTunes. And we also want to thank you for helping us with our mission of transforming our world through the mastery and power of human emotions. Today we're talking with Jude Bijou, who's the daughter of pioneering behavioral child psychologist Sydney Bijou, and is herself a marriage and family therapist and a longtime student of Eastern philosophy. And Jude, before we get back into attitude reconstruction, I wanted to talk a little bit. Your father studied with B.F. Skinner and developed a lot of behavioral programs for which he was very famous. And as we talked earlier, you focus people ahead to what they want to become. And I just wanted to have an idea. Are there ways in which you think your father's focus on psychology encouraged you to move into this field and develop your theory?
Yes, absolutely. I think that I saw someone who was always interested in children and how to make their lives better. And so what I also found from him was that power of observation. Like, he was a quiet guy, but he was not into his head to make interpretations about why children were the way they were. He looked and saw, what are they doing? What's working? What's getting the child so they're, maybe so they can dress themselves, so they're learning in school? And he would be dealing with concrete, observable things. And I really think that I got that from him at a really early age, was that, you know, that's something you can see a lot just by looking, mm-hmm. that kind of thing. Mm-hmm. And as well, like, from him, and it's the theme that one of the themes that you're talking about is that he was looking for solutions. It's not about in the mud and why and all that. It's more like what can move things forward. You know, looking for the positive, reinforcing the positive, putting the energy on what will work. And for him, it was teaching teachers and teaching parents as well as the actual child, because that's who's going to be around them. It's not just when the child is in therapy or in school, but the whole environment needs to be supportive of the child getting to their maximum potential.
Wow. That's really nice. That must be wonderful to have that in your background. So I'm interested also in a technique that you offer in attitude reconstruction called powering. Now, one of the things that I've learned is that the subconscious mind can't resist repetition. So if you say something over and over, it takes it as truth. All right, that's been my way of understanding it. With powering, you can either, if I got this correctly, if you're having one of those bad attitude things, you can just interrupt it with another thought, or you can also start repeating another phrase that you'd prefer to have running in your brain. And that sounds a lot like what I do when I want to change the belief that I have in my brain. Are they related?
Absolutely. Absolutely. Ah. And what I really found was, as I was, again, listening to people in my own experience, is that we're all pretty much the same. We have the same kind of destructive chatter. We all go around in this bubble thinking it's just us that think these bad thoughts about ourselves or other people, about worry, like you say, and about time. But we all do it, and so there's just really a finite number of negative things that we're saying. But what we can do, because I, like you, I work with the positive, it's like, what contradicts those? What's the, I say the truth, what's what I work with, what I call reliable truth. They're not affirmations, which are desires or wishes, but what's true that contradicts my old thinking? So instead of going, you know, I'm such an idiot, I always make mistakes, blah, 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 I can take something like, life is for learning. We all make mistakes. And instead of, see, we've done 100,000 million repetitions of, I'm a jerk, I blew it again. That's so insidious, where we can go to, that's like you say, repetition. Life's for learning. We all make mistakes. Life's for learning. We all make mistakes. And this really came from my meditation, my Eastern background, where it's very much like mantra repetition. So over and over and over, we're paying attention and out loud as well as silently thinking what contradicts our old destructive thoughts. So it's identifying the old thought, figuring out what is true. And a lot of times people don't even need to know the old thoughts. They just gravitate. I'll bring out a piece of paper. Hey, which of these reliable truths contradict your old thinking? Oh, I like that one. I like that one, that one. So we take one of those truths and start repeating it like a mantra, like meditation, over and over and over. And so what we're thinking are thoughts that bring more joy, love, and peace, because those are the thoughts that we think when we're naturally feeling loving. We naturally see that we're all the same, or that we're all on the same path. So we work by repetition over and over to contradict the old thoughts and replace them with the new.
That's beautiful. About 3 weeks ago, I hosted Jamal Yogis, who wrote a book called The Fear Project. And he tells a story in there of a long-distance swimmer who was out in the ocean with a follow boat and so forth, and suddenly saw this. She knew she was in white shark territory, and she suddenly saw this very light-colored, huge thing under her as she was swimming. And she had to make a decision about whether to get out of the water or not. And instead, she started repeating in her mind the words, I belong here too. This is also my ocean. And it turned out to be a couple of elephant seals, and they swam off. So I think that's really kind of powerful, you know, physical manifestation of what you're talking about, too.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Because to do that fear reactive thing of, oh, my God, it's a shark, it's a shark. It's not a shark. So it's because you want to stay in your center. And what she said were beautiful truths, right? This is as much mine as yours. And that supported her. And the consequence was she could keep swimming. Absolutely.
I like that, where you're just looking for... Yeah, so how do people determine their truths? I know you have a number listed in attitude reconstruction, so I can refer people there. But you can determine your own truths, too, can you not?
Absolutely. You see, if you identify what thought am I thinking over and over in my mind, well, and like a good example is like those what ifs, right? You know, well, what if this happens, and what if this happens? What? You know, what am I going to do? And oh, there's so much, and so we create all this overwhelm in our own head and in our bodies by thinking those kind of what if kind of worry thoughts. So I go, okay, that's what I think. That's not serving me very well. That's only getting me more agitated and more fearful. What's really true? What's really true? And then you can think about it, and you can start to write some out on a paper. Like, well, what is true? And it's sort of like, maybe it's something like, I'll handle the future in the future. I'll handle the future in the future. And you go, you know, everything will be all right. Everything will be all right. Being play around with what feels to you, because you're the only one that can really tell what kind of thought is going to offset your particular destructive thinking. Mm-hmm. But you can play around with it. Just write down a few and repeat. If you repeat a truth 10 or 20 times, you'll know. You're going, oh, that doesn't work. Oh, let me tweak this word. Let me change this. And so that with just a little bit of finessing, you can find a very powerful expression for yourself. And then I say 100,000 reps, because we've done it so much, is to tell ourselves, oh, what if this is going to happen? What if this? Oh, blah, blah, blah. So we can have a new companion that we really construct ourselves. But I would say if you're talking about worry and if you're talking about fear and all that future, what I say, futurizing, that you're going to be really good, well off, better off if you start to shake as well. A couple minutes of shivering and quivering and trembling, I know it sounds corny, and it sounds like, oh, my gosh, I wouldn't do that. But if you just try it, if you just let that energy out of the body, woo, and you can say your new truth. You can try it out. Everything's all right. Everything's all right. And I'm shaking. Everything's all right. Everything's all right. Everything's all right. That you'll be able to internalize the truth so much more quickly, because you've honored the emotional body as well as you're changing the thinking that goes with it.
Mm-hmm. Well, we have an opportunity for you to do some real-life work with that. We have a caller named Cindy. Would you be interested to work with her about some anger issues?
Absolutely.
Okay. Cindy, you're on the line. You say you're trying to get everything to work the way you want and get angry when you can't control things.
Well, the first thing is that she needs to find a safe place and figure out how she can move that energy, because she can feel the physiology in the body. She knows when she starts to get heated up and, you know, constricted. And so maybe she's going to go into the bathroom or back bedroom or the garage or into the car, and she just needs to move that energy out. So like in the car, you can grab, not while you're driving, but you're in the car, grab that steering wheel and shake it. Whoa, whoa, oh, it feels so good. Or you can hit the passenger seat if you're in the driver's seat. Hit that passenger seat with your arm. Oh. So if you move that energy out, you feel better. You'll start to laugh after a minute or so, and you just move that energy. And then we really need a good, solid truth that combats that old thinking. And one of the best encompassing, reliable truths that I've ever come in contact is from this psychologist named Albert Ellis. And he invented or discovered or came up with this expression, that people and things are the way they are, not the way I want them to be. People and things are the way they are, not the way I want them to be. People and things are the way they are, not the way I want them to be. So that very powerful sentence contradicts all of our head trips saying that they should be different than the way they are. They're not. People are the way they are. My child is the way she is. The government is the way he is. It is. The people drive the way. I've got to accept it, because anger, when we don't express it, turns into non-acceptance. And in order to feel more love, we must accept the way things are. I've got to accept it. I don't like what my daughter's doing, but I've got to accept, oh, she's melting down. I've got to accept it. And then if I accept it, then from a loving place, not an angry place, I can figure out what I need to do. Mm-hmm. It's because I've changed myself first.
So a further question that's coming through on the chat is that Cindy says she gets into a bath. That strikes me, but it doesn't work. That strikes me as trying to trying to calm yourself down, when what you're talking about is move the energy. Don't try to. It's almost like sitting in it if you're sitting in a hot bath, isn't it?
Exactly, and then you're telling yourself your same old story that only makes you feel more angry. See what the kids are doing. They are, or animals do, like say fear, for instance. Like when the dog is at the vet or a child is frightened, the body naturally shivers. And so that's what we need to do. But it's the same kind of thing. The child naturally has that tantrum. And it's not like, oh, I'll go exercise. Oh, I'll go run 5 miles. Or, oh, I'll go take some deep breaths. That's not what the child does. They let that, they scream, their face gets so red, they're just what we feel like is out of control, but the reality is they're handling their emotions. And then it passes, and that's what we need to do. So it's find a safe way to move that energy out of the body, whether you can find a safe way at work or at home, no matter where you are. Find a way, take that minute or two, move the energy, and then you can get on with your day.
So the opposite of anger is love, or the positive aspect. Maybe you won't call it the opposite per se.
No, the opposite emotion. I would say the opposite emotion to anger.
Oh, the opposite emotion. Okay.
Mm-hmm.
Does it stand to reason that if I get angry with people a lot, and the solution would be love, that likely I have not felt enough love in my life?
It's interesting, because we can also we can have this bucket of anger, but we can also have some love, but we don't have that full expression of love to the extent that we could if the anger wasn't dragging us down.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Well, go ahead.
Well, we have all six emotions. Everybody has all of those. So somebody can have, what I say, an anger constitution, a lot of that anger, but they can still have, be in a loving relationship or love their children, but they also are quick to anger, which means that they're not accepting. They're now, I love my child when they're being the way I want them, but now I am so angry at them, and that's what we can start to move out. I want to feel more love so that I can act, I can speak, I can act, I can be in ways that are going to make me and my environment feel more joy, love, and peace, really.
Mm-hmm. I'm a recovered angry person. That's the way I refer to myself. I came out of my family with a huge amount of anger. And I did get married when I was 19, and I had children, my first child at 28, and I really did care for my child. But I would say that the anger really did get in the way of me loving other people. I just couldn't love them as completely. The anger came first. And so, you know, now love does replace where the anger used to be. You know, I can say to, oh, I feel, you know, anger doesn't go away. It's not that I don't ever feel it again. But now I say, okay, I'm feeling angry. What's the most loving way I can deal with this? What's the most loving thing I can do? You would have phrases, you know, that people, you know, they're not who I want them to be and they're never going to be, sort of thing. So, you know, in terms of the fullness of love, and certainly it was true that a lot of the anger that I got was, or developed, was because a form of love, the supportive love that you and I were talking about before the show, was not there for me, and not until I gave it to myself could I move. Have you found that, or can people just automatically move? If I'm a dyed-in-the-wool angry person and I come out of my childhood, maybe I'm in my 30s or 40s, and I've been angry all my life, can I just move into love by following attitude reconstruction steps?
Absolutely, you can. There, but there,
oh,
there is another element here. But you can, absolutely. But you also sometimes need a supportive environment where we can talk about what happened back then, that back then it wasn't safe to express our sadness, anger, and fear.
That's
so
true.
So in a safe environment, we can go back and revisit those old things. But it's not to just keep talking the story around and around. It's to feel and express the emotions that we couldn't take care of then. Like if you had a father who was angry and out of control, that was scary, but it also made us feel angry. That was our response, and, of course, sad. So we need to really honor what we couldn't do then, and that will help us move through to love. But what is so amazing is that if you start thinking these thoughts that are associated with love or with peace or with joy, that what will come up, because they're the truth, they're associated with those emotions. If I'm going and thinking something like, my job is to take care of myself. My job is to take care of myself. This is a sadness truth. My job is to take care of myself. If I keep repeating that, I'll probably start crying. My job is to take care of myself, because we're contradicting all those old messages that said, in order to be loved, you got to take care of other people. Oh, you're going to be selfish if you pay attention to yourself. If we stay focused on the truth, my job is to take care of myself, or only if I take care of myself can I really take care of others. And that will bring up the old stored emotions that we can then just express physically, and then we can start to own that which we're saying and that which we're thinking.
That's lovely. I like that system. Thank you for that. Cindy, by the way, says that what you've said makes a lot of sense, and she'll try some of your suggestions. So
fabulous.
Fabulous, right. All right, we're talking today with marriage and family therapist Jude Bijou about her blueprint for building a better life as laid out in her award-winning book, Attitude Reconstruction. We're going to find out more about how to communicate with people in the grip of emotions when we return after these messages here on Full Power Living.
You're listening to Full Power Living with Eileen Dillon.
Do you know that emotionally, children form the foundation for their life during their first 7 years? Most adults just repeat that early emotional learning, good or bad, over and over for the rest of their lives. If you want to give your child an opportunity to live an emotionally masterful life, then join me, Eileen Dillon, also known as the Emotional Pro, for a free one-hour teleseminar on what it takes for your child to become an emotional master. You'll discover important things like what emotions are designed to do for us, four things it's vital for parents to tell their children about emotions, and the single most important thing to do when someone is feeling emotion.
Register now at RaiseIncredibleKids.com. The time has come for us to allow emotions their rightful place in our lives as the tools and helpers they're created to be. Find out what you need to know in order to give this vital information to your children so they can live emotionally masterful lives. Go now to RaiseIncredibleKids.com for your free Emotional Mastery Teleseminar. Our guest, Jude Bijou's website is attitudereconstruction.com. And before we dive back in, Jude, you have a photograph of President Obama on your website holding your open book. Could you tell us about that?
This is a vision of the goal. So my brother, my dear brother, is a master at Photoshop. And so he put that together as a vision of that's what we really need through our country. We need all governments and all different business and so on, families and teaching and so on, to have this information. I believe that the book belongs next to the Gideon's Bible in every hotel room because it's so practical. It's so uplifting. It can move you out of what's not working to what's working. And so that's the vision. I want to spread it everywhere.
Thank you for explaining that. I didn't quite get all that. Now, the third thing we have first, we're going to move it out physically. Then we're going to deal with what we say in our heads and what we push out to the world. And the third thing is to listen to our own selves, to learn to follow our own intuition. Tell us a little bit about how to work with that.
Well, the reason, you know, intuition has really gotten a bad rap, but I believe intuition is just what we know inside in those clear moments. We know what's true. We know it's time to go visit our ailing parents or that it's time to quit a job or whatever. We know that, but what keeps us from listening is all those head trips. I would say for all those emotions and all those destructive thoughts, all that static takes us away from getting in touch with what we know. So I say, move out the energy, and then you can take a pause and ask your question. Well, and make it nice and specific. Well, what do I need to do at work? What's going to make my work life happier? And then just pause, and an answer will come up that we really know. Oh, I should stop criticizing. I should stop being so critical. Oh, okay. It's not a no-brainer. It's not, you know, a big voice and God coming down and it's seeing it in big script letters. It's like we really know.
Mm-hmm.
So it's just listening, because the drag is, well, first we have to listen because we know, oh, I shouldn't go here, I shouldn't do that. But we don't pay attention. We have to listen and hear, and then we have to obey. That's the part. That's the kicker. Oh, I know I shouldn't eat that chocolate pie. Oh, but there it goes. We've got to obey what we really know.
It's interesting. I was telling someone the story of and my early marriage. I was going off on a ski trip with a friend, and another woman friend with her child showed up and unexpectedly and was staying at our house. And as I was getting ready to go on the ski trip, I was probably 29 years old, I had this terrible feeling that my husband was going to have an affair with this woman while I was gone. And so I called him on the phone in tears and said, I have this terrible feeling. Are you going to do something like this? And he said, oh, no, she's like a child to me. I would never do such a thing. So I went ahead and went on the trip. And my intuition was correct. I heard it. I paid attention to it, but I didn't stand behind it. And so that was the straw that broke up our marriage. And, you know, I suppose that was going to happen anyway. But now I listen to my intuition a lot more. And you're right that once you get the emotions handled, then you can hear it much better. And also the more you listen to your emotion, the easier your life is to live. That's my experience.
Absolutely, because making a big list of the pros and cons of a decision doesn't really bring that satisfying feeling. You need to have your heart come with you. You need to have it in that, you know, cellular level. And that's what checking in with your inside will give you. It's like, oh, okay, you know, I shouldn't go on the trip, or, you know, whatever the message that you get, and then obeying that.
So there's so many things. We're not even going to begin to get to them that you have in attitude reconstruction. You give 5 steps for resolving stuck situations. You give 4 steps for changing old habits, including addictions. And you have in the back of the book pages and pages of worksheets, particularly for helping us move ourselves from sadness to joy, or from anger to love, and from fear to peace. You also do a lot of work on communication. So I want to look a little bit at communication. You talk about 4 rules and 4 violations. Will you tell us about that, please, 4 rules of communicating?
Absolutely, because I believe that, one, we just weren't taught. We watched and saw what our parents did. Because what I teach is communication usually. And I have to say, all right, and how many people feel listened to enough? How many people had their parents who were good communicators? Maybe one person, maybe two people. We just weren't taught the rules of communication. And what I found, it's the same thing, because you alluded to this earlier, that attitude reconstruction is so beautiful because it integrates the same rules govern our thinking, as our acting, as our speaking. All are governed by the same kind of rules. I have to honor myself, I have to accept other people, and I have to stay present and specific. So that means that, because that's the way we win the grand prize, that's the way we're going to get joy, love, and peace, if we just go with those 3 concepts. But so for communication, there's just 4 rules. And I've really said the 4th rule is we've got to listen. We've got to, I say, put that duct tape on our mouth and just listen for half the time. Again, people don't feel listened to enough. So that's 1 of the 4 rules. So it means there's only 3 rules about speaking, no matter whether it's in the workplace or the family life or it's inside in your own head to yourself. The 1st rule is that you have to focus on yourself. What's true for me? What's my I? And this is sort of fashionable, but it's what's my truth? That's what I know for sure. So it's an I, not you. You. You didn't do that, and you said you would do this, and you're like that. We don't respond to yous unless it's positive. But all those yous only create more distance, more anger. So if we want to have more love, we've got to share about ourselves. So we have to turn that focus from out there to, well, what's true for me? That's the 1st rule, what's true for me. 2nd, what's the specific that we're dealing with? This isn't about you always, you never. Everyone thinks it's about, we're talking about a specific event, a specific situation. And so it's learning to identify what's that, and not bringing in the whole kitchen sink of all the other kind of issues that are unresolved. This is what happens. We get in a fight with our partner, and we don't even remember what the original topic is, because 3 hours later we brought in all of the stuff, and nothing's gotten resolved. We've just stirred up everything. I say deal with what's 1 issue at a time. Be specific about that thing. And we can talk about those other issues, but 1 at a time. Let's finish this one, and let's get specific about this and say what I specifically want and what's true for me about that, and then we can go on to another topic. So really, eyes and specifics, I say, will take you 90% to where you want to go. I'm talking about myself, about a specific thing that I need resolution or understanding about. Eyes and specifics, listening, of course. And the 3rd one is kindness. And kindness means we look for what's going to move things forward, what's going to be positive, what's going to be appreciative, what's going to bring gratitude. So it's, and praise, it's looking for the good. So if I really pay attention to what's true for me about this specific thing, and what do I appreciate about it? How can we deal with it, but deal with it in a constructive way, following the rules? And then communication can happen. Then I'm going to stop and listen to what another person has to say, and together we can put it together and really have some good understanding.
I remember having a disagreement with my husband maybe a year or so ago, and I stopped myself because I was angry with him, and I said, I want you to know that I know what a good heart you have, and that I know you intend to be supportive of me. And it just melted everything, you know, to give that. So I really appreciate what you're saying. Now, we're about to run out of time, but I think the system that you have is no more simply and elegantly seen than when we talk with people who are in the grip of emotions. You offer three communication bridges. If somebody's feeling sad, do this. If they're angry, tell us that very briefly, please.
Oh, I love that you zeroed in on that, because it was so profound when I really understood that concept. When we're feeling sad, or when somebody else is feeling sad, what we really need is exactly what you said. We need appreciation, because that's something. We don't honor ourselves. We're feeling bad. That's that sadness. So we need appreciation. I can appreciate others, appreciate myself. That is going to bridge the communication. So it's appreciation when sad. When we're angry, we need to be listened to. We need to be understood. When a person's angry, they don't need to be logical. We need to just understand them, understanding. And with fear, what we need fear is, what we need at those moments is reassurance. Everything's going to be all right. We'll do this together, or a touch. But that's the way we're going to calm down either ourselves or somebody else who is agitated, who has been feeling a lot of fear. Reassure them, we'll do this together. Everything will be okay. We'll handle one thing at a time. That is the salve that soothes the fear.
Wow. What a piece of wisdom. That's really wonderful. Just briefly, what do you want people most to remember from your appearance here today?
Well, I do want to say that on the website, which you mentioned a couple of times, www.attitudereconstruction.com, that people can take a survey, a free survey, to figure out exactly what bad attitudes are causing them problems, and then go to a link to have some very good solutions about how to deal with them. So that's one thing. Also on the website is this blueprint. What I discovered originally is that our mind and our body, our thoughts, our emotions, all correlate together, and it's a blueprint of the mind. That's why it's called a blueprint for building a better life. And it's on the inside cover of the book, but people can download it for free as well from the website. And there you can identify, oh, I'm over here on the sadness, anger, and fear side. I'm thinking these things. I'm doing these things. Oh, this is how I can go to the other side, the joy, love, and peace side. So it's a valuable tool that anybody can download without needing to buy either the regular book or this other book, which is called 33 Bad Attitudes and What You Can Do About Them. So I would just say, and really in closing, just give it a try. Try moving the emotions out. Try having that big old cry when you feel sad rather than holding it in, or moving out that anger by growling for a few minutes, or hitting something with a heavy bag with a plastic bat, or shaking and shivering. Try it out. Try it out. That's the proof is in the pudding. You'll see how magic it is.
That's really great. Thank you for your careful and caring work, Jude. And let me remind people, your book is Attitude Reconstruction, A Blueprint for Building a Better Life. And the website is attitudereconstruction.com. Thank you so much for your enthusiasm and your being here with us on Full Power Living today, Jude. It's been a pleasure.
Just thank you so much for this opportunity.
Great. All right, so join us live every Thursday at 9 a.m. Pacific time for more powerful experiences on Full Power Living. And listen next week when scientist and researcher Catherine Tristan asks and answers the question, why worry? And I want to thank our listener, Gabriella from Germany, who took the time to write and tell me that she listens and gets benefit from our many wonderful guests. Please write me yourself and tell me where you are and your reaction to our shows. Eileen, I-L-E-N-E, at emotionalpro.com is my email. So write me. Robin Johnston of Fresh Talk Media has been our producer today. Thank you, Robin. For now, I'm Eileen Dillon, your host, reminding you to pay attention not to what you want to overcome, but to what you want to become. See you next time.
Full Power Living with Eileen Dillon.